So for sensory modulation, I'd say it's kind of like it's like a graphic equalizer on a stereo where all the sensory sensors have a slider, but they're turned up too high by default. But cannabis helps me to turn them down and focus on individual ones, which helps me to avoid sensory overload or mitigate it if it's already happening.
That was Justin Clark, who has autism, explaining how cannabis helps him dial down the external inputs that cause him sensory overload and feelings of overwhelm. For Justin, cannabis has quietened the mental noise he experiences, enabling him to embark on new pursuits such as stand-up comedy, something he'd never thought possible previously. Justin can teach us all a thing or two about getting out of our comfort zone. And it was a real privilege to listen to his inspiring story. You're listening to Cannabis Voices. People's stories in their own words about the healing power of the cannabis plant. Hi, Justin. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, just kind of post Christmas, getting used to the routine again. And obviously in the UK we are in the eye of the storm of all things COVID right now. How have you been coping in these COVID times?
Yeah, it's been interesting, quite difficult at times, but yeah, I think I've coped so far. I'm still here. I'm still at work, still doing things.
So obviously we're going to have a chat about your experiences with cannabis, just sort of, yeah, helping to cope, in life really. But I think a lot of us don't really, well, we have very little understanding about what autism is. And obviously it's this huge spectrum, and people are familiar with this idea of there being a spectrum for autism. But I just wondered whether you could describe what it was like growing up as a child and a teenager and a young adult with autism, but without a diagnosis for autism. So how did it kind of, how was life growing up?
So, before I answer that, I'd like to say I can only really speak for my own experience. I can't speak for anyone else who's autistic. I can only say what I experience and what I find helpful. So I'm not trying to tell anyone that they should go start using cannabis or anything like that. Just that it may be a tool that they may find helpful.
Okay, great.
So, growing up as a child and a teenager and a young adult before being diagnosed with autism was quite confusing and traumatizing and scary at times. I would use computers to escape a lot. So now I have a career in IT that I don't really want. So, trauma, anxiety, and depression are often part and parcel of living as a neurodiverse person in a world that rarely makes sense or tries to understand. And I think that's very much the case for me.
Are there examples that you can give, just to put in a context, I suppose, of when you were a child, when you know it was traumatic, or things that didn't make sense that you've that really, yeah, that were traumatic for you?
I think a lot of the time I just felt like I was on a completely different wavelength to everyone else. So it was like kind of like I was unable to connect with them. So it kind of just everything scared me. So I kind of wanted to escape it.
And so scared in terms of made you feel anxious, or what how was it, and how was this, did the scariness kind of manifest?
I think it was that I didn't really know how to deal with things. So the fact that I didn't know what to do just made it feel all the more worse. And the fact that I had no explanation for why I wasn't fitting in or why I was struggling in certain situations.
Because I guess, you know, back then, so I guess this would be, how old are you, Justin, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 31 now.
Okay, so I mean this would have been kind of 20 years ago or something, so there wasn't so much of an understanding amongst the general populace of autism, I guess. So I mean, were there sort of sensorial sort of anxieties, because there is, you know, again, from, I suppose, a neurotypical person, I suppose, well, things that I've read about autism, and I know that, you know, you're one person sharing your experiences, and this is, you know, obviously a something that's very diverse. Was there a sense of being kind of overwhelmed by senses and inputs and life in general?
I think this is something that I'm actually learning a lot more about myself now. So I may have not had an explanation for it when I was younger, but a lot of the time I recall feeling extremely overwhelmed in certain situations. And I've kind of been able to work out that's a lot of the time would have been due to sensory overload. So too much sensory inputs going on at the same time, or loud noises, strong smells, strong tastes, that kind of thing.
Okay, interesting. So what prompted the diagnosis, and how did you feel once you got it?
So I was struggling quite a lot in university, and I'd been aware for a while that I was probably on the spectrum, but I hadn't really sought diagnosis, or when I'd sought diagnosis, I'd encountered GPs that were not knowledgeable in the area and who had not been very helpful at all, to be honest. Kind of come to realize now that I could have probably been diagnosed a lot sooner if GPs were more versed in the subject at the time.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I had quite a difficult time in college. So I think I just struggled with the concentrating on work and organizing myself and all that kind of thing, the kind of thing that you don't really have to do that much in school. So I struggled a lot through that and didn't really get any support apart from a bit of counselling here and there. Then in university, I found myself struggling in my final year of my final year project, because up until this point in university, I had been essentially just finishing off work the night before all the time.
Okay.
Because that's how it worked for me. Something else I'll go into. I've also got an ADHD diagnosis, which kind of explains that a bit. Basically, I'd wait until the last minute because I needed the adrenaline to push me to actually do the work. Otherwise, I just wouldn't focus or wouldn't be able to motivate myself to do it.
Yeah.
And there was the issues with the final year dissertation. Kind of, I think I'd already approached the, I think it was Learning Support Center, it was called, at the university at this stage. So I'd approached them maybe the year before the second year of university. And they'd thought it was quite likely that I could be on the spectrum. And they'd put me on a waiting list because they often got private psychiatrists in to do diagnoses for like a number of students in a day and that kind of thing. So I was waiting for that for a while. Yes, I was having a lot of issues with my final year dissertation, and I was able to secure some support once I actually received a diagnosis, which enabled me to go on and complete my degree.
But then when you finish your final year and then you do your exams and then you're in the big wide world, right? So it's another big change. So how did you cope with that change when you leave some security that exists in university to you know, to being an adult, fully fledged adult?
Yeah, it took some time to transition, I think, because it was not very, very easy for me to find a job to begin with, as with many university students.
What was it like doing interviews and stuff? That must have been quite tricky, right?
Yeah, that was pretty nerve-wracking, because I didn't really know what to expect from those.
Yeah.
I've always struggled with those, really, although I think I've improved a bit lately, because I've got a bit more socially relaxed in general.
Okay, great.
In recent times.
And so you've got the sort of support after the diagnosis. Is there any sort of prescription medication that you were given by your doctor? Is that the sort of, is ASD something you get meds for?
There's nothing actually prescribed for autism specifically, but often people on the spectrum are prescribed various different medications for issues they experience as a side effect of being autistic. Much of the time, so like things like anxiety, depression, and that kind of thing. So antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs. I've been prescribed SSRI antidepressants and also beta blockers.
Yeah.
SSRI antidepressants. I'd say that I was on them for, I was taking them for maybe 4 years. I'd say that they were effective in some measure, in that I was not feeling very good at the time, and they kind of kept me in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But they just kind of numbed me.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'd say they definitely were helpful to me, but I'm not sure they were worth the side effects that I experienced from them.
Okay. And were there other side effects apart from the kind of feeling numbed?
A lot of it was just generally feeling fatigued all the time.
Okay.
And it wasn't something that I really experienced from depression before taking the SSRI tablets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although that did wear off with time, and eventually I don't think it really affected how awake I felt.
Okay, so you were sort of, things were on an even keel, Justin, you know, in terms of managing the depression and anxiety. But obviously, I guess it sounds like there was a search or a curiosity about whether there was something else that could help. So obviously, it's, you know, eventually cannabis kind of came in your direction. But I'm wondering what your opinion was when you were growing up about cannabis.
Yeah, when growing up, I was told all the same things as everyone else in school, really. So I tended to lump cannabis in with all the other drugs, and I assumed all the legal drugs were for stupid people, since obviously only stupid people break the law or choose to harm themselves. My opinion on cannabis and drugs in general changed when I followed the infamous sacking of Professor David Nutt from the government's Drugs Advisory Committee. Council, and I started looking into things for myself about drugs then, and realized okay. That much of what I was told in school about them, including cannabis, was somewhat questionable.
So we have a kind of international audience for the podcast. Just can you just explain a little bit about who David Nutt, well, who he is, but who he was in that moment, what his role was, and why he was sacked?
So David Nutt was the chief of the Advisory Council for the Misuse of Drugs, and he was sacked by the government in 2007 or 2008 for, I think it was to do with comparing the risks of horse riding to taking ecstasy.
Right. I've done both, and I've probably, yeah, broken a few more bones riding horses.
Yeah. But essentially, he pointed out that risky activities are risky regardless of whether they're taking a pill or riding a horse or doing a risky physical activity.
And the government
The government were not best pleased about this.
Right.
Because it kind of went against their whole morality, I think.
Yeah. So he got the sack. And just for anybody, he's Professor David Nutt, and he launched Drug Science, which you can probably explain what drug science is to the people listening, Justin.
Yeah, drug science is like it's an independent scientific organization that aims to research many of the currently illicit drugs. I think that's how I'd describe it.
Yeah, and they've also launched this great initiative, Project 2021, which is to get 20,000 patients receiving prescriptions for medical cannabis to gather data, I think, by the end of this year, basically. But we will go on to that later, because you are one of those patients who are taking part in this program. So getting back to initially to how your path crossed with cannabis, when did you first consider trying it for your autism?
So I'd read and was aware of experiences reported by other autistic individuals who had been using it as a tool to help them online as early as maybe 2011. But I did not first start to use it therapeutically myself until 2017.
And so it's one thing to think, okay, this could help. 2017 in the UK, cannabis was completely illegal, whether it be medicinally or recreationally. So you were having to find it from the illicit market, I assume. How was that experience?
It was not too bad compared to some that I've heard. I used Instagram. Instagram provided me with instant grams.
Okay. Okay. I mean, and you know, you were sort of cannabis naive before this. How, obviously, there was, you know, a myriad of strains and how did you go about choosing initially?
So to begin with, who I was buying from only had one thing, so I just tried that and it was okay. Well, it was pretty right. good at the time,
yeah.
although I'm not sure what I'd think of it now.
Okay, well, can you go back to that when you first tried it and just share, you know, your experiences? Was it how, did it affect you how you expected?
I'd say the first time I tried it, I was kind of lifted, felt like there was a weight taken off my shoulders, and I had an evening of enjoyable music and food.
Sounds good.
One of the things that I find cannabis particularly helpful for, I'd call sensory modulation. So kind of like being able to focus in on individual senses and enjoy them and that kind of thing.
Without cannabis, is it difficult for you to focus in on individual senses?
Yeah, I find it quite difficult to switch off from other things when I'm, for example, trying to enjoy some music or some food. So I'll find it difficult to tune in.
Okay. Is that also partly to do with the ADHD or do you think
I think it's both. I'd actually say that I was diagnosed with ADHD this year. So that's a recent diagnosis. But I consider it to be just an extension of my autism diagnosis, to be honest. And I've started to realize that a lot of my issues relating to ADHD are actually sensory related. So I find that when I'm able to ease my sensory overload, I can concentrate better and organize myself better because I have more mental capacity.
Right. So there's like less noise. So you can actually kind of, you know, focus and get on with something.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, I could compare it to the ADHD medication because I tried that as well.
Okay. How do they compare?
I'd say the ADHD medication kind of just let me continue operating as I was already doing. So I was able to just focus on everything. Whereas I'd say the cannabis doesn't really make me focus on things, but makes me free to choose to.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, they're quite subtle differences, aren't they? And I guess these are subtle differences that when you're developing a drug might be too subtle but actually in terms of living a fulfilling life or you know, just kind of getting on with things are actually, you know, pretty important.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the harms comparison is like between amphetamines and cannabis, but cannabis seems a lot more balanced to me.
Yeah,
from my experience of using both as therapeutic tools.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. It feels like they couldn't be more kind of diametrically opposed, really, for, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you'd assume someone with cannabis is just going to chill out and they're not maybe going to be so good as focusing on things as someone who's hopped up on amphetamines. But all these things affect people differently.
When you first started off, you took whatever you could get from your dealer, essentially. With experience, did you start to find that a certain ratio of THC and CBD was better, or was it always pretty much the same, whatever you got from your dealer?
With the illegal market, I've tended to find that I've been able to get a fairly consistent supply of one particular strain called Star Dog,
right?
I do happen to find particularly helpful, which is very lucky.
Yeah,
because it's widely available. But my supplier would often get in others regularly too, so I'd kind of sample them and see what they were like in comparison.
Yeah.
Most of these, because of being on the street, they were high in THC and low in CBD. But this didn't really matter to me because high THC is what I kind of found to be most useful to me from experience. Okay. I haven't really found there to be much difference when I've added a bit of CBD.
Yeah. That's interesting because a lot of the studies, I think these particularly, well, the studies that are coming out of Israel, and I guess they are the kind of younger children who are maybe nonverbal and have like the kind of self-injurious side of the end of the spectrum. And maybe it's because it feels uncomfortable giving children high THC strains. They tend to kind of opt for the CBD. But I've also heard from parents. I don't know if you know Abigail Dar. She's a great Israeli sort of super mum, an advocate for medical cannabis, who her son is in his 20s, but he is on the kind of non-verbal end of the spectrum, and for him he needed THC in his cannabis medicine, because if there was less THC and it was a CBD dominant strain, it tended to make him, I think, slightly more anxious and more hyperactive, was her experience. So, but anyway, I wonder, just in summary, can you describe overall how regularly consuming cannabis has helped you, Justin?
So, I'd say there's three key areas that it helps me in. Those are sensory modulation, socially relaxing, and executive functioning and concentration. So for sensory modulation, I'd say it's kind of like it's like a graphic equalizer on a stereo, where all the sensors have a slider, but they're turned up too high by default. But cannabis helps me to turn them down and focus on individual ones, which helps me to avoid sensory overload or mitigate it if it's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
Socially relaxing, I'd say I'm better able to relax around others and I'm better able to join in conversation, especially in group situations. I'm a lot more comfortable when I've had a small amount of cannabis. Seems to help me to just tune into what's going on, and I find it much easier to follow what everyone else is saying as well.
Okay. And does it help? This is slightly off our list of questions, because part of the awkwardness in social interactions, I guess have read about autism, is the difficulty in reading other people. Has that been your experience, and has cannabis helped with that?
I'd say that I still find it difficult to read other people, but when I've had some cannabis, I feel like I have more capacity to be able to dedicate to translating people's body language and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it seems like I'm freeing up capacity in my brain by reducing the noise.
And I sort of cut you short. You were talking also about kind of how it's helped with executive function as well.
Yeah. So I'm more capable of organizing myself and concentrating and motivating myself when I'm in a position of sensory comfort. That's something I've noticed. So there's a bit of a crossover with the benefits that I get from what I call the sensory modulation. I also find cannabis can help me to think less rigidly and with more flexibility than otherwise I would. And this can be helpful for creative and abstract thought and trying to come up with new ideas and that kind of thing.
Fantastic. And have your friends and family noticed a difference in how you've been interacting with them since using cannabis?
It was noticed that I was a lot more relaxed and willing to join in at family gatherings when I've visited family in Norfolk a few times before. Yeah. I'd revealed my medication.
Okay.
So I didn't reveal it immediately.
Right. You didn't reveal it because of the kind of how you thought they might react, or?
Yeah, you never know really how people are going to react to it. I don't think I've really received any negative comments about my use from family. Yeah. Or from friends, but it's possible some people were judging me without telling me. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's up to them, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's their choice to do that. Now, I remember, I think the first time I heard you sort of speak about all this, Justin, you were on a panel when we were talking about, or it came up about chronic pain. And it really, I found it fascinating, because people think of cannabis and pain in the sort of, for arthritis or nerve pain or anything like that, chronic pain, physical pain, I suppose. And you made a very interesting point that it helps you with pain, but not in the kind of conventional sense. And I wondered if you could perhaps explain what you meant by that.
So I think I meant it in a sensory sense for the most part. So regarding pain specifically, I think what I meant was about kind of sensory anxiety. So I'd say that there's like a constant sort of sensory anxiety of sorts simmering away in the background in my subconscious. Mm. And I find that being able to calm it helps me to go about my activities better. So yeah. I think I was just trying to point out that anxiety can be pain, or sensory derived pain is also pain.
Yeah.
And I know it's not possible to, it's probably not possible to hook me up to a brain scanner and check that I'm experiencing a sensory overload, because it probably doesn't look like anything specific.
I mean, you know, pain and suffering is subjective, right? And certainly, you know, someone who from time to time has anxiety, it is painful. It is a type of pain. And I could imagine a sensory overload would literally make your brain hurt, frankly. So I get it. And I just, you know, I was at the time very grateful that you shared that, because it was interesting to get, you know, that perspective. So thankfully now you have been able to go the legal route. So if anybody doesn't know, since 2018 in the UK, well, there was a rescheduling of cannabis to Schedule 2, and patients can now legally access medical cannabis, albeit largely through private clinics. So you now have a prescription, Justin. Can you tell me how this has come about and what your experience has been?
I became aware of Project 21, which is run by Drug Science, David Nutt's organization. It's a registry for prescribing and collecting evidence for a number of conditions for the use of medical cannabis. I'm prescribed for anxiety, although for reasons that I'll go into, it's been effective and not effective. So I've had delays with all of my prescriptions so far that I've received legally.
Okay.
So it's essentially been less reliable than the black market, and I've had to fill in a bunch of forms for the privilege as well.
Right. Interesting. Okay. How has it compared in terms of cost to
so
you?
So the cost of the medicine itself is very much comparable to the black market, slightly less, I think.
Okay.
Depending who you're purchasing it from.
Mm-hmm.
But the consultation fees kind of make it up, I think, to around the same as street costs. So I don't think there's any particular cost benefit to me.
Yeah.
Of being a legal patient.
Out of interest, so what is the prescription? Is it for oil, flowers? What's the kind of cannabinoid ratio?
I have a prescription for flowers, and it's 21% THC and 0.1% CBD or under, I think it said.
Okay.
So it's very low CBD.
So, I mean, as I say, you know, it is legal. You have got your prescription, but do you feel free to, you know, to take your medicine when you're out and about in public?
I was quite freely taking it before I had a legal prescription.
Okay, although, right.
I'm always quite discreet about it, because it's not because I'm scared. I just don't really want to be noticed most of the time. I'd rather just vape my cannabis and be left alone.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And the vaporizing has definitely been helpful in that regard, because it lets off a lot less smell than burning it.
So, in terms of the therapeutic benefits, how does it compare to what you were getting from the black market?
So the two strains I've tried have been, they've both been like 20% THC and hardly any CBD. And they've both been kind of different. I'd say the first one that I tried, which was called Chiron, was somewhat stimulating in some ways.
Okay, yeah.
So I found that quite useful to use during the day whilst trying to focus on doing work and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say the second lot that I've had, I've only had two prescriptions so far, waiting on the third one. So the second lot that I had was not quite as stimulating, despite containing the same amount of THC. So I think it contained a different terpene profile. Yeah, I think I could probably see a place for both of them in my medicine cabinet, to be honest.
So I'm interested, Justin. I have a sense that since beginning your cannabis journey, you've certainly become a quite an active patient advocate, right? So I know you're involved with PLEA, which is patient-led. You have to remind me of what the
Yeah,
acronym stands
patient-led
for.
engagement for access.
And I've certainly seen, videos of you standing up in front of a crowd of people and giving a talk, and you've been doing webinars, and so I have this sense that a whole kind of world has opened up since beginning this cannabis journey. So I'm interested to know, what are the things that you're doing now in your life or that you hope to do in the future that you didn't imagine possible before trying cannabis?
Yeah, I think I'd say cannabis is a it's a good it's been a great enabler for me. So it's kind of I think it's kind of enabled me to take advantage of opportunities that maybe I wouldn't otherwise be able to, or I would have felt less able to. So in the future, but before I go into the future, is it okay if I say what I've done since I started my journey?
Please, absolutely. That's what I want to hear,
That
definitely.
would probably it's relevant actually, because some of the stuff I want to do in the future is related to the past. Surprise, surprise.
All right.
So, some of the things that I've done since discovering medical cannabis, or since discovering cannabis that helps me, are that I did an improv comedy course in 2017. Then I did a stand-up comedy course. Then I did a Couch to 5K running group thing. I just decided I wanted to try it, and there was a group that met up in the park, and I was really nervous, so I got a bit stoned beforehand. And I did that a few times until I was fairly comfortable with the people that I was running with, and then I didn't need it anymore. I was just able to run without it, and I've actually kept running. I'm still running now. I did a half marathon on the 31st of October.
Brilliant.
So it's been useful for. It was useful for that because it was a situation where I was just approaching a group of random strangers who wanted to go running. I mean, we were all there for the same thing, so we kind of had something in common, but it was still a bit,
Yeah, still scary.
yeah, scary for me, especially being not someone who really socially engages that much day to day normally at that time. So, I spoke in Parliament about medical cannabis at one point. That was with the UPA.
Fantastic. In
Someone who
front
can say,
of MPs or
I think the MPs were busy, but it wasn't like the main house. It was one of the houses, but yeah. So that I can say that I've got high in the Houses of Parliament. That's one thing I can say because I did that. But mainly that day was just a. It was an amazing day that I spoke that day because there was people that came up to me afterwards who were talking about how they had things in common with my experience and that kind of thing. And it made me realize that I wasn't just speaking for me. It wasn't just about me anymore. That's kind of why I've kept doing it, I think. Because it feels like there's lots of people out there that are voiceless who cannabis could help. And they need a voice.
Also, I can imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, that like with autism, I mean, we're all very kind of locked within our heads anyway, but with autism, I guess it's kind of quite introspective and you're kind of locked inside all these the sensory overloads and the anxiety and stuff like that. And then to be opening up and feeling part of something that's bigger than yourself, that's quite an important shift, right?
Yeah, and especially now looking back at it, I realize that while it may not have been like the thing that made it happen, it played a part in changing the law. So that basically tells me that change is possible. You can change things. You can change the world if you want to.
Exactly, exactly. You stand up and count
it. You just have to think about how you're doing it and who you're working with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how about sort of future aspiration? I know it's very hard at the moment to make any plans, but, you know, things that you're hoping to do in the future that cannabis is sort of facilitated with, you know, these changes that have made it possible.
I think I'm going to try and do some more stand-up comedy when it's possible, because that was good fun.
Right. Have you actually done a show? Have you done a...
So at the end of the course that I did in 2018, there's like a show. I've got a video of it somewhere. I can probably send you it.
Do you know what we can add it in the show notes, Justin, if you'd like people to be able to watch it.
It opens with a cannabis joke.
Okay, brilliant. Well, it's perfect then. We have to share it in that case.
I think I'd like to continue with medical cannabis activism, so I want to keep speaking out in that regard, and I want to keep volunteering with PLEA and helping with the patient working group there, which is like a group of patients. We're all like working out what we can do to advance the cause, really.
Well, it really, listening to it really feels like...
I wouldn't say it's not been like a golden solution or anything like that, but it's been a great enabling tool to have access to.
Yeah, but I guess people, you know, experiencing a version of Justin that they wasn't kind of available to them before because of the noise and the anxiety and the kind of, you know, the sensory overload. So it's like a kind of version of yourself that was always there is kind of,
it's kind of like it's enabled me to kind of crawl a bit more out of my shell.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Absolutely, absolutely.
And it's like, I used to think comfort zone, better stay in my comfort zone all the time. But now I just think, when I realize that I've like reached the limit of my comfort zone, I think, oh, it'd be fun to go further.
Well, do you know what? I think, you know, most of us neurotypical folks could do with a bit of following that advice as well. So, it's been really...
There's one more thing that I forgot to mention.
Okay, so, good.
Another thing that I found kind of has helped me to get through was I had a workplace grievance to do with being treated unfairly due to being autistic. And... that caused me a significant amount of stress.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I was able to persist with it and eventually obtain a favorable outcome because I was able to manage my anxiety levels better.
Yeah.
Because of having access to a tool.
Thank you, Justin. It's been truly fascinating. And I'll sort of leave all the links to your stand-up performance and to PLEA and to Project 2021 in the show notes if people want to check it out. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Cannabis Voices. If you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share with your family and friends.